Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, and with Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your favorites and still hit your health goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.co. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Julian Jameson. Eric the Red's Saga. Anonymous. Translated from the Old Norse by John Sefton. Chapter 1. Olaf, who was called Olaf the White, was styled a warrior king. He was the son of King Ingjald, the son of Helgi, the son of Olaf, the son of Gudrid, the son of Halfdan Whiteleg, king of the Uplands, in Norway. He led a harrying expedition of sea rovers into the west, and conquered Dublin, in Ireland, and Dublinshire, over which he made himself king. He married Aud the Deep-Minded, daughter of Ketil Flatnose, son of Bjorn the Ungartered, a nobleman from Norway. Their son was named Thorstein the Red. Olaf fell in battle in Ireland, and then Aud and Thorstein went into the Sudreyar, the Hebrides. There Thorstein married Thorid, daughter of Eivind the Easterling, sister of Helgi the Lean, and they had many children. Thorstein became a warrior king and formed an alliance with Earl Sigurd the Great, son of Eystein the Rattler. They conquered Caithness, Sutherland, Ross, and Moray, and more than half Scotland. Over these, Thorstein was king until the Scots plotted against him, and he fell there in battle. Aud was in Caithness when she heard of Thorstein's death. Then she caused a merchant ship to be secretly built in the wood, and when she was ready, directed her course out into the Orkneys. There she gave in marriage Thorstein the Red's daughter, Gro, who became mother of Grelad, whom Earl Thorfinn, the Skull-Cleaver, married. Afterwards, Aud set out to seek Iceland, having 20 free men in her ship. Aud came to Iceland and passed the first winter in Bjarnarhofn, or Bjornshaven, with her brother Bjorn. Afterwards she occupied all the Dale country between the Dogurdara, or Daimiel River, and the Skramuklaupsa, or River of the Giantess's Leap, and dwelt at Hvam. She had prayer meetings at Krosshalar, Cross Hills, where she caused crosses to be erected, for she was baptized and deeply devoted to the faith. There came with her to Iceland many men worthy of honor, who had been taken captive in sea-roving expeditions to the west, and who were called bondmen. One of these was named Vifil. He was a man of high family, and had been taken captive beyond the western main, and was also called a bondman before Aud set him free. And when Aud granted dwellings to her ship's company, Vifil asked why she gave no abode to him, like unto the others. Aud replied that it was of no moment to him, for, she said, he would be esteemed in whatever place he was, as one worthy of honor. she gave him Vifilsdalr, or Vifilsdale, and he dwelt there and married. His sons were Thorbjorn and Thorgeir, promising men, and they grew up in their father's house. Chapter 2. There was a man named Thorvald, the son of Asvald, the son of Ulf, the son of Ixnathoras. His son was named Eric. Father and son removed from Jadar in Norway to Iceland because of manslaughters, and occupied land in Hornstrandir, and dwelt at Drangar. There Thorvald died, and Eric then married Thjodhild, daughter of Jorund, the son of Atli, and of Thorbjorg the ship-breasted, whom afterwards Thorbjorn, of the Haukadalr, or Hawkdale, family, married. He it was who dwelt at Eriksstadr after Eric removed from the north. It is near Vatshorn. Then did Eric's thralls cause a landslip on the estate of Valthjof, at Valthjofsstadr. Eyjolf the Foul, his kinsman, slew the thralls beside Skadesbrekkr, slopes of the racecourse, above Vatshorn. In return, Eric slew Eyjolf the Foul. He slew also Hrafn the Dueler at Lakeskalr, or Playbooths. Gerstein and Odd of Jorfi, kinsmen of Eyjolf, were found willing to follow up his death by a legal prosecution, and then was Eric banished from Haukadalr. He occupied then Broke and Eiksnei, and dwelt at Tradir in Sudre the first winter. At this time did he lend to Thorgest pillars for seat stocks. Afterwards Eric removed into Eiksnei, and dwelt at Eriksstadr. He then claimed his pillars, and got them not. Then went Eric, and fetched the pillars from Beðabólstadr, and Thorgest went after him. They fought at a short distance from the hayyard at Drangar, and there fell two sons of Thorgest, and some other men. After that they both kept a large body of men together. Steyr gave assistance to Eric, as also did Eyjolf of Svini, Thorbjorn Vifilsson, and the sons of Thorbrand of Alptafjordr, Swanfirth. But the sons of Thord Gellir, as also Thorgeir of Hitardalr, Hotdale, Aslak of Langadalr, Longdale, and Illugi, his son, gave assistance to Thorgest. Eric and his people were outlawed at Thorsnes Thing. He prepared a ship in Eriksvagr, or Creek, and Eyjolf concealed him in Dumanarvagr, while Thorgest and his people sought him among the islands. Eric said to his people that he purposed to seek for the land which Gunnbjorn, the son of Ulf the Crow, saw when he was driven westwards over the ocean, and discovered Gunnbjarnsker, Gunnbjorn's rock or skerry. He promised that he would return to visit his friends if he found the land. Thorbjorn and Eyjolf and Styr accompanied Eric beyond the islands. They separated in the most friendly manner, Eric saying that he would be of the like assistance to them if he should be able so to be, and they should happen to need him. Then he sailed oceanwards under Snæfellsjökull, Snow Mountain Glacier, and arrived at the glacier called Blazerkr, or Blue Shirt. Thence he journeyed south to see if there were any inhabitants of the country. He passed the first winter at Eriksey, near the middle of the Vestribygd, western settlement. The following spring he proceeded to Eriksfjordr, and fixed his abode there. During the summer he proceeded into the unpeopled districts in the west, and was there a long time, giving names to the places far and wide. The second winter he passed in Eriksholmar, Isles, off Kvarsgnupr, Peak of Disappearance, Cape Farewell. And the third summer he went altogether northwards, to Snæfell and into Hrafnsfjordr, or Ravensfirth. Considering then that he had come to the head of Eriksfjordr, he turned back, and passed the third winter in Eiriksey, before the mouth of Eiriksfjörður. Now, afterwards, during the summer, he proceeded to Iceland, and came to Breiðafjörður, or Broadfirth. This winter he was with Ingolf, at Holmlatr, Island Litter. During the spring, Thorgest and he fought, and Eirik met with defeat. After that they were reconciled. In the summer, Eirik went to live in the land which he had discovered, and which he called Greenland. "Because," said he, "men will desire much the more to go there, if the land has a good name." End of chapter 2. Eirik the Red's Saga, Anonymous, read for LibriVox.org by Julian Jameson. Chapter 3. Thorgeir Vifilsson married and took to wife Arnora, daughter of Einar, from Laugarbrekka, the slope of the hot spring, the son of Sigmund, the son of Ketil Thistil, who had occupied Thistilsfjörður. The second daughter of Einar was named Hallveig. Thorbjorn Vifilsson took her to wife, and received with her the land of Laugarbrekka, at Hellesvollr, the cave hill. To that spot Thorbjorn removed his abode, and became great and worshipful. He was the temple priest, and had a magnificent estate. Thorbjorn's daughter was Gudrid, the fairest of women, and of peerless nobility in all her conduct. There was a man named Orm, who dwelt at Arnarstapi, Eagle Rock, and he had a wife who was named Haldis. He was a well-to-do franklin, a great friend of Thorbjorn, and Gudrid lived at his house as his foster-child for a long time. There was a man named Thorgeir, who dwelt at Thorgeirsfjall, or Fell. He was mighty rich in cattle, and had been made a freedman. He had a son, whose name was Einar, a handsome man, well-mannered, and a great dandy. Einar, at this time, was a travelling merchant, sailing from land to land with great success, and he always passed his winter either in Iceland or in Norway. Now, after this, I have to tell how that one autumn, when Einar was in Iceland, he proceeded with his wares along Snæfellsnes, with the object of selling. He came to Arnarstapi. Orm invited him to stay there, and Einar accepted his invitation, because there was a friendship between him and Orm's people, and his wares were earned into a certain outhouse. There he unpacked his merchandise, showed it to Orm and the housemen, and bade Orm take therefrom such things as he would. Orm accepted the offer, and pronounced Einar to be a goodly, gallant traveller, and a great favourite of fortune. When now they were busy with the wares, a woman passed before the door of the outhouse, and Einar inquired of Orm who that fair woman might be, passing before the door. "I have not seen her here before," said he. "That is Gudrid, my foster-child," said Orm, "daughter of Thorbjorn the Franklin, from Laugarbrekka." "She must be a good match," said Einar. "Surely she has not been without suitors, who have made proposals for her, has she?" Orm answered, "Proposals have certainly been made, friend, but this treasure is not to be had for the picking up. It is found that she will be particular in her choice, as well as also her father." "Well, in spite of that," quoth Einar, "she is the woman whom I have it in my mind to propose for, and I wish that in this suit of mine you approach her father on my part, and apply yourself to plead diligently for me, for which I shall pay you in return a perfect friendship. The Franklin, Thorbjorn, may reflect that our families would be suitably joined in the bonds of affinity, for he is a man in a position of great honour, and owns a fine abode, but his personal property, I am told, is greatly on the decrease. Neither I nor my father lack lands or personal property, and if this alliance should be brought about, the greatest assistance would accrue to Thorbjorn. Then answered Orm, "Of a surety I consider myself to be thy friend, and yet I am not willing to bring forward this suit, for Thorbjorn is of a proud mind, and withal a very ambitious man." Einar replied that he desired no other thing than that his offer of marriage should be made known. Orm then consented to undertake his suit, and Einar journeyed south again until he came home. A while after, Thorbjorn had a harvest feast, as he was bound to have because of his great rank. There were present Orm from Arnarstapi, and many other friends of Thorbjorn. Orm entered into conversation with Thorbjorn, and told him how that Einar had lately been to see him from Thorgeirsfjall, and was become a promising man. He now began the wooing on behalf of Einar, and said that an alliance between the families would be very suitable on account of certain interests. "There may arise to thee, Franklin," he said, "great assistance in thy means from this alliance." But Thorbjorn answered, "I did not expect the like proposal from thee, that I should give my daughter in marriage to the son of a thrall. And so thou perceivest that my substance is decreasing. Well, then, my daughter shall not go home with thee, since thou considerest her worthy of so poor a match." Then went Orm home again, and each of the other guests to his own household, and Gudrid remained with her father, and stayed at home that winter. Now, in the spring, Thorbjorn made a feast to his friends, and a goodly banquet was prepared. There came many guests, and the banquet was of the best. Now, at the banquet, Thorbjorn called for a hearing, and thus spake, "Here have I dwelt a long time. I have experienced the good will of men and their affection towards me, and I consider that our dealings with one another have been mutually agreeable. But now do my money matters begin to bring me uneasiness, although to this time my condition has not been reckoned contemptible. I wish, therefore, to break up my household before I lose my honour, to remove from the country before I disgrace my family. So now I purpose to look after the promises of Eric the Red, my friend, which he made when we separated at Breiðafjörður. I purpose to depart for Greenland in the summer, if events proceed as I could wish." These tidings about this design appeared to the guests to be important, for Thorbjorn had long been beloved by his friends. They felt that he would only have made so public a declaration that it might be held of no avail to attempt to dissuade him from his purpose. Thorbjorn distributed gifts among the guests, and then the feast was brought to an end, and they departed to their own homesteads. Thorbjorn sold his lands, and bought a ship which had been laid up on shore at the mouth of the Hraunhofen, harbour of the lava field. 30 men ventured on the expedition with him. There was Orm from Arnarstapi, and his wife, and those friends of Thorbjorn who did not wish to be separated from him. Then they launched the ship, and set sail with a favourable wind. But when they came out into the open sea, the favourable wind ceased, and they experienced great gales, and made but an ill-sped voyage throughout the summer. In addition to that trouble, there came fever upon the expedition, and Orm died, and Haldis, his wife, and half the company. Then the sea waxed rougher, and they endured much toil and misery in many ways, and only reached Herjolfsness in Greenland at the very beginning of winter. There dwelt at Herjolfsness the man who was called Thorkell. He was a useful man, and most worthy Franklin. He received Thorbjorn and all his ship's company for the winter, assisting them in right noble fashion. This pleased Thorbjorn well, and his companions in the voyage. At that time there was a great dearth in Greenland. Those who had been out on fishing expeditions had caught little, and some had not returned. There was in the settlement the woman whose name was Thorbjorg. She was a prophetess, Spae Queen, and was called Littlevolva, or Little Sibyl. She had had 9 sisters, and they were all Spae Queens, and she was the only one now living. It was a custom of Thorbjorg, in the winter time, to make a circuit, and people invited her to their houses, especially those who had any curiosity about the season, or desired to know their fate. And inasmuch as Thorkell was chief franklin thereabouts, he considered that it concerned him to know when the scarcity which overhung the settlement should cease. He invited, therefore, the spy queen to his house, and prepared for her a hearty welcome, as was the custom wherever a reception was accorded a woman of this kind. A high seat was prepared for her, and a cushion laid thereon in which were poultry feathers. Now, when she came in the evening, accompanied by the man who had been sent to meet her, she was dressed in such wise that she had a blue mantle over her, with strings for the neck, and it was inlaid with gems quite down to the skirt. On her neck she had glass beads. On her head she had a black hood of lambskin, lined with ermine. A staff she had in her hand, with a knob thereon. It was ornamented with brass, and inlaid with gems round about the knob. Around her she wore a girdle of soft hair, and therein was a large skin bag, in which she kept the talismans needful to her in her wisdom. She wore hairy calf-skin shoes on her feet, with long and strong-looking thongs to them, and great knobs of latten at the ends. On her hands she had gloves of ermine skin, and they were white and hairy within. Now, when she entered, all men thought it their bounden duty to offer her becoming greetings, and these she received according as the men were agreeable to her. The franklin, Thorkell, took the wise woman by the hand, and led her to the seat prepared for her. He requested her to cast her eyes over his herd, his household, and his homestead. She remained silent altogether. During the evening the tables were set, and now I must tell you what food was made ready for the spy queen. There was prepared for her porridge of kid's milk, and hearts of all kinds of living creatures there found were cooked for her. She had a brazen spoon, and a knife with a handle of walrus tusk, which was mounted with two rings of brass, and the point of it was broken off. When the tables were removed, the franklin, Thorkell, advanced to Thorbjorg, and asked her how she liked his homestead, or the appearance of the men, or how soon she would ascertain that which he had asked, and which the men desired to know. She replied that she would not give answer before the morning, after she had slept there for the night. And when the next day was far spent, the preparations were made for her which she required for the exercise of her enchantments. She begged them to bring to her those women who were acquainted with the lore needed for the exercise of the enchantments, and which is known by the name of weird songs. But no such women came forward. Then was search made throughout the homestead if any woman were so learned. Then answered Gudrid, "I am not skilled in deep learning, nor am I a wise woman, although Haldis, my foster-mother, taught me in Iceland the lore which she called weird songs." "Then art thou wise in good season," answered Thorbjorg. But Gudrid replied, "That lore and the ceremony are of such a kind that I purpose to be of no assistance therein, because I am a Christian woman." Then answered Thorbjorg, "Thou mightest perchance afford thy help to the men in this company, and yet be none the worse woman than thou wast before. But to Thorkell give I charge to provide here the things that are needful." Thorkell thereupon urged Gudrid to consent, and she yielded to his wishes. The women formed a ring round about, and Thorbjorg ascended the scaffold and the seat prepared for her enchantments. Then sang Gudrid the weird song, in so beautiful and excellent a manner that no one there did it seem that he had ever heard before the song and voice so beautiful as now. The spy queen thanked her for the song. "Many spirits," said she, "have been present under its charm, and were pleased to listen to the song, who before would turn away from us, and grant us no such homage. And now are many things clear to me, which before were hidden both from me and others. And I am able this to say, that the dearth will last no longer, the season improving as spring advances. the epidemic of fever which has long oppressed us will disappear quicker than we could have hoped. And thee, Gudrid, will I recompense straightway for that aid of thine which has stood us in good stead, because thy destiny is now clear to me and foreseen. Thou shalt make a match here in Greenland, a most honourable one, though it will not be a long-lived one for thee, because thy way lies out to Iceland, and there shall arise from thee a line of descendants, both numerous and goodly, and over the branches of thy family shall shine a bright ray. And so fare thee now well and happily, my daughter. Afterwards the men went to the wise woman, and each inquired after what he was most curious to know. She was also liberal of her replies, and what she said proved true. After this came one from another homestead after her, and she then went there. Thorbjorn was invited, because he did not wish to remain at home while such heathen worship was performing. The weather soon improved when once spring began, as Thorbjorg had said. Thorbjorn made ready his ship, and went on until he came to Brattahlid, the steep slope. Eric received him with the utmost cordiality, seeing he had done well to come there. Thorbjorn and his family were with him during the winter, and in the following spring Eric gave to Thorbjorn land at Stokness, and handsome farm buildings were there built for him, and he dwelt there afterwards. End of chapter 3. This recording is in the public domain. Eric the Red's Saga, anonymous, read for LibriVox.org by Julian Jameson. Chapter 4. Eric had a wife who was named Thjodhild, and two sons. The one was named Thorstein, and the other Leif. These sons of Eric were both promising men. Thorstein was then at home with his father, and there was at that time no man in Greenland who was thought so highly of as he. Leif had sailed to Norway, and was there with King Olaf Tryggvason. Now, when Leif sailed from Greenland during the summer, he and his men were driven out of their course to the Sudreyar. They were slow in getting a favorable wind from this place, and they stayed there a long time during the summer, reaching Norway about harvest-tide. He joined the bodyguard of King Olaf Tryggvason, and the king formed an excellent opinion of him, and it appeared to him that Leif was a well-bred man. Once upon a time the king entered into conversation with Leif, and asked him, "Dost thou purpose sailing to Greenland in summer?" Leif answered, "I should wish so to do, if it is your will." The king replied, "I think it may well be so. Thou shalt go my errand, and preach Christianity in Greenland." Leif said that he was willing to undertake it, but that for himself he considered that message a difficult one to proclaim in Greenland. But the king said that he knew no man who was better fitted for the work than he. "And thou shalt carry," said he, "good luck with thee in it." "That can only be," said Leif, "if I carry yours with me." Leif set sail as soon as he was ready. He was tossed about a long time out at sea, and lighted upon lands of which before he had no expectation. There were fields of wild wheat, and the vine tree in full growth. There were also the trees which were called maples, and they gathered of all this certain tokens, some trunks so large that they were used in house-building. Leif came upon men who had been shipwrecked, and took them home with him, and gave them sustenance during the winter. Thus did he show his great munificence, and his graciousness, when he brought Christianity to the land, and saved the shipwrecked crew. He was called Leif the Lucky. Leif reached land in Eriksfjörður, and proceeded home to Brattahlid. The people received him gladly. He soon after preached Christianity and Catholic truth throughout the land, making known to the people the message of King Olaf Tryggvason, and declaring how many renowned deeds and what great glory accompanied this faith. Eric took coldly to the proposal to forsake his religion, but his wife, Thjodhild, promptly yielded and caused a church to be built not very near the houses. The building was called Thjodhild's Church. In that spot she offered her prayers, and so did those men who received Christ, and they were many. After she accepted the faith, Thjodhild would have no intercourse with Eric, and this was a great trial to his temper. After this there was much talk about making ready to go to the land which Leif had discovered. Thorstein, Eric's son, was chief mover in this, a worthy man, wise and much liked. Eric was also asked to go, and they believed that his luck and foresight would be of the highest use. He was for a long time against it, but did not say nay, when his friends exhorted him to go. They made ready the ship which Thorbjorn had brought there, and there were 20 men who undertook to start in her. They had little property, but chiefly weapons and food. On the morning when Eric left home, he took a little box, which had in it gold and silver. He hid the money, and then went forth on his journey. He had proceeded, however, but a little way, when he fell from his horse, and broke his ribs and injured his shoulder, and cried out, "Ay!" At this accident he sent word to his wife that she should take away the money that he had hidden, declaring his misfortune to be a penalty paid on account of having hid the money. Afterwards they sailed away out of Eriksfjordr with gladness, as their plan seemed to promise success. They were driven about for a long time on the open sea, and came not into the track which they desired. They came in sight of Iceland, and also met with birds from the coast of Ireland. Then was their ship tossed to and fro on the sea. They returned about harvest-tide, worn out by toil and much exhausted, and reached Eriksfjordr at the beginning of winter. Then spake Eric, "You were in better spirits in the summer, when you went forth out of the firth, than you are in now, and yet for all that there is much to be thankful for." Thorstein replied, "It is a chieftain's duty now to look after some arrangement for these men, who are without shelter, and to find them food." Eric answered, "That is an ever true saying, 'You know not until you have got your answer.' I will now take thy counsel about this. All those who had no other abodes were to go with the father and the son. Then came they to land, and went forth home." Chapter 5. Now, after this, I have to tell you how Thorstein, Eric's son, began wooing Gudrid, Thorbjorn's daughter. To his proposals a favorable answer was given, both by the maid herself and also by her father. The marriage was also arranged, so that Thorstein went to take possession of his bride, and the bridal feast was held at Brattahlid in the autumn. The banquet went off well, and was numerously attended. Thorstein owned a homestead in the Vestribygd, on the estate known as Lysufjordr, Shining Firth. The man who was called Thorstein owned the other half of the homestead. His wife was called Sigrid. Thorstein went, during the autumn, to Lysufjordr, to his namesake, both he and Gudrid. Their reception was a welcome one. They were there during the winter. When little of the winter was past, the event happened there that fever broke out on their estate. The overseer of the work was named Garth. He was an unpopular man. He took the fever first, and died. Afterwards, and with but little intermission, one took the fever after another, and died. Then Thorstein, Eric's son, fell ill, and also Sigrid, the wife of his namesake, Thorstein. And one evening Sigrid left the house, and rested a while opposite the outer door, and Gudrid accompanied her. And they looked back towards the outer door, and Sigrid screamed out aloud. Gudrid said, "We have come forth unwarily, and thou canst in no wise withstand the cold. let us even go home as quickly as possible." "It is not safe as matters are," answered Sigrid. "There is all that crowd of dead people before the door. Thorstein, thy husband, also, and myself, I recognize among them, and it is a grief thus to behold." And when this passed away, she said, "Let us now go, Gudrid. I see the crowd no longer." Thorstein, Eric's son, had also disappeared from her sight. He had seemed to have a whip in his hand, and to wish to smite the ghostly troop. Afterwards they went in, and before morning came she was dead, and a coffin was prepared for the body. Now, the same day, the men purposed to go out fishing, and Thorstein led them to the landing-places, and in the early morning he went to see what they had caught. Then Thorstein, Eric's son, sent word to his namesake to come to him, saying that matters at home were hardly quiet, that the housewife was endeavouring to rise to her feet and to get under the clothes beside him, and when he was come in she had risen upon the edge of the bed. Then took he her by the hands, and laid a pole-axe upon her breast. Thorstein, Eric's son, died near nightfall. Thorstein the Franklin begged Gudrid to lie down and sleep, saying that he would watch over the body during the night. So she did, and when a little of the night was past, Thorstein, Eric's son, sat up and spake, saying he wished Gudrid to be called to him, and that he wished to speak with her. "God wills," he said, "that this hour be given to me for my own, and the further completion of my plan." Thorstein, the Franklin, went to find Gudrid, and waked her, begged her to cross herself, and to ask God for help, and told her what Thorstein, Eric's son, had spoken with him. "And he wishes," said he, "to meet with thee. Thou art obliged to consider what plan thou wilt adopt, because I can in this issue advise thee in no wise." She answered, "It may be that this wonderful thing, has regard to certain matters, which are afterwards to be had in memory. And I hope that God's keeping will test upon me, and I will, with God's grace, undertake the risk and go to him, and know what he will say, for I shall not be able to escape if harm must happen to me. I am far from wishing that he should go elsewhere. I suspect, moreover, that the matter will be a pressing one." Then went Gudrid and saw Thorstein. He appeared to her as if shedding tears. He spake in her ear, in a low voice, certain words which she alone might know. But this he said so that all heard: that those men would be blessed who held the true faith, and that all salvation and mercy accompanied it, and that many, nevertheless, held it lightly. "It is," said he, "no good custom which has prevailed here in Greenland since Christianity came, to bury men in unconsecrated ground, with few religious rites over them. I wish for myself, and for those other men who have died, to be taken to the church. But for Garth, I wish him to be burned on a funeral pile, as soon as may be, for he is the cause of all those ghosts which have been among us this winter." He spake to Gudrid also about her own state, saying that her destiny would be a great one, and begged her to beware of marrying Greenland men. He begged her also to pay over their property to the church, and some to the poor, and then he sank down for the second time. It had been a custom in Greenland, after Christianity was brought there, to bury men in unconsecrated ground, on the farms where they died. An upright stake was placed over a body, and when the priests came afterwards to the place, then was the stake pulled out, consecrated water poured therein, and a funeral service held, though it might be long after the burial. The bodies were removed to the church in Eriksfjordr, and funeral services held by the priests. After that died Thorbjorn. The whole property then went to Gudrid. Eric received her into his household, and looked well after her stores. End of chapter 5. This recording is in the public domain.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.